At the Inspirational Living Podcast, we encourage entrepreneurship. But if you've ever tried to start a new business, it seems like your to-do list keeps growing every day. Finding the right tool that not only helps you out, but simplifies everything, can be a real game changer. For millions of small business owners, that tool is Shopify. 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. is powered by Shopify. Do you know why? Well, for one thing, Shopify has hundreds of ready-to-use templates that make it easy to build a beautiful online store to match your brand's style. Shopify also accelerates your content creation. They're packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. And perhaps most importantly, Shopify provides world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping, to processing returns and beyond. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling at shopify.com/inspirational. Go to shopify.com/inspirational. shopify.com/inspirational. Welcome to Our Sunday Talks, an exclusive series for the patrons of the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's talk was edited and adapted from What is Worthwhile by Anna Robertson Brown, published in 1893. Pretense, worry, discontent, and self-seeking. These are the things that we may let go. Now, what are the things in life that are worthwhile? That we should lay hold of, keep, guard, and use? It is worthwhile to be wise in the use of time. In the eternal life, there is no waste of years. It is with time that we purchase everything that life has of good. It is by the wise use of time that we make ourselves competent for eternity. The most reckless spendthrift in the world is the one who squanders time. Money lost may be regained. Friendships broken may be renewed. Houses and lands may be sold or buried or burnt, but then may be bought or gained or built again. But what power can restore the moment that has passed, the day whose sun has set, the year that is gone? It awes me when I think of it, that there was a time when you and I were not, when the cycles of eternity swept onward, and the stars turned in their courses without the sight or sound of humankind. But now there can never come a time when you and I shall not be. The vast gift of eternity has been laid in your hands and mine, an eternity not wholly to come, but one which is even now, here. Shall we not use its hours aright? The question of life is not, how much time have we? For in each day, each of us has exactly the same amount. We have all there is. The question is, what shall we do with it? Shall we let this priceless gift slip away from us in haphazard deeds? Or shall we adopt some plan of saving and of systematic doing in our lives? What shall this plan be? How shall we determine what things are worth giving time to? Let us think about this question. In our thoughts, let us not forget one point. Time spent in being interrupted is not time lost. A strong thinker once said, "No one knocks at my door who is not sent by God." We are spending time well when we are paying it out to God. to buy the things he means our lives to own, whether he is putting before us a duty to be done, a friend to be won, a small service to be rendered, a book to be written, a child to be consoled, or a house to be set in order. There is time enough given us to do all that God means us to do each day, and to do it gloriously. How do we know but that the interruption we snarl at is the most blessed thing that has come to us in a long time? In all our lives, though time is given us to eat, drink, sleep, work, and play, there is no moment given us to throw away. We have to meet this question of the wise use of time not only as individuals, we must consider it as it affects associations and in our united power for good in the world. We are working out a problem in history, and the world is looking on to see what we will do with our lives. We cannot afford to lose a moment of usefulness, or the sum of our influence will be less than it might have been. Suppose each of us should resolve today that not a minute henceforth will ever be wasted. What energy there would be in our lives, what strength, what noble purpose, what grand results. What could we not accomplish as an association, if no one of us ever lost time in grieving, in dreaming, in regret, in harmful pleasures, in idle talk? Eternity is long. There will be time enough for dreams. But life is for work and for patience. Let each of us ask themselves today, how much am I going to deduct from the grand possible total of time in my life by my idleness, my wastefulness? Let us lay hold of work. There can be no happy life without strenuous, unremitting work in it. Work which occupies mind, body, heart, and soul. But what work shall we set ourselves to do? This is one of the questions that meets us when we leave college, and that reappears from time to time as we see more of the possibilities of life. We fear that we make mistakes. We do not want to throw our powers away, to build walls of sand when we might have built monuments more lasting than bronze. There are three questions that we may ask about a work before we decide to take it up. Is it legitimate? Is it individual? Is it vital? How many kinds of work an honest answer to these questions would cut out at once? By legitimate, I mean, does it conflict with any present known duty? If so, that work is not for our hands to do. If we attempt it, we are leaving our duty undone and become a busybody in other people's matters. By individual, I mean, is it a work that belongs to me alone? It is a wonderful truth that no one of us is put into life without a special and particular work to do. Emerson says, "Nature arms each person with some faculty, which enables them to do easily some feat impossible to any other." How true this is! In all the universe of God, there are no two souls alike. There are no two with the same work to do. There are no two whose talents are rivals, or whose gifts conflict or interfere. How this thought ought to put an end at once to all the envy of life, grieving at another's good. Their good is not my good. It was never meant to be. I could not gain it if I tried. On the other hand, what I can do, my neighbor cannot. Why should either of us be jealous of the other, or imagine that we are in conflict? Each human soul can say, "I am unique." In all the worlds and worlds, in all the ages and ages, there has never been anyone like me. and in all time there shall never be again. I have no double. Now we must ask, is the work vital? Is it of eternal moment, either in strengthening my own character, or inspiring others, or helping the world? If so, the work is worth doing. So let us not try to escape our work, nor to shirk it. Above all, let us not fail to see it. As long as we live, we have a work to do. We shall never be too old for it, nor too feeble. Illness, weakness, fatigue, sorrow. None of these things can excuse us from this work of ours. That we are alive today is proof positive that God has something for us to do today. Let us ask ourselves as we arise each morning, what is my work today? We do not know where the influence of today will end. Our lives may outgrow all our present thoughts and outdazzle all our dreams. Every day is a test day. Every hour is an examination hour. God puts each fresh morning, each new chance of life, into our hands as a gift to see what we will do with it. As Dr. Trumbull says, today is, for all that we know, the opportunity and occasion of our lives. On what we do or say today may depend the success and completeness of our entire life struggle. It is for us, therefore, to use every moment of today as if our very eternity were dependent on its words and deeds. Today it is given you to be patient, to be unselfish, to be purposeful, to be strong, eager, and to work mightily. If you do these things, and if remembering all your blessings, do them with a grateful heart, you shall be happy, at least as happy as it is given us to be on earth. Disappointment in life is inevitable. Pain is the common lot of humanity. Sharp sorrow at one time or another will come to each of us, if indeed it has not already come. But this same sorrow is a gentle teacher and reveals many things that would otherwise be hard to understand. Remember that there is no new sorrow. We are called upon to bear nothing that has not been borne before. With that in mind, shall we grumble at our lot when countless mourning hearts, as sensitive, as true, as loving as our own, have met this grief of ours, whatever it may be, and have conquered it? Shall we not rather now in turn try to bear our burdens more bravely than any that have gone before, that we may give strength and courage to the weary ones who must bear it after us? Every day of meeting sorrow superbly makes the life more grand. Every tear that falls from one's own eyes gives a deeper tenderness of look, of touch, of word that shall soothe another's woe. Sorrow is not given to us alone that we may mourn. It is given us that, having felt, suffered, and wept, we may be able to understand, love, and bless. Let us lay hold of faith. Of what profit is it to us to gain a firm hold on life if we hold it but blindly, without any light on the meaning of our present condition or the character of our future destiny? Faith holds the key to the blessedness of the eternal life. Faith opens the gate of pearl and lets us in. Strong, serene, unquenchable faith in the wisdom of providence, the guiding hand of the divine, will enable us to look fearlessly toward the end of this temporal existence and the beginning of the eternal, and will make it possible for us to live our lives effectively, grandly. Letting go the unworthy things that meet us, pretense, worry, discontent, and self-seeking, and taking loyal hold of time, work, present happiness, love, duty, friendship, sorrow, and faith. Let us so live in all true character as to be an inspiration, strength, and blessing to those whose lives are touched by ours.